The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster May, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Banks Radio. Text, email, call and WhatsApp for this open line today through to one. Peel commissioners are not quite up in arms, but not far off it. Peel commissioners are going to be filing objections to the draft North and West Area Plan over concerns about the amount of housing proposed for Peel. They're saying, Ray Harmer, one of the commissioners, says a minimum of an extra 2,500 people in Peel. 2,500. Well, this is all part of the plan. If we're going to have 15,000 extra people on the Isle of Man, they have to go somewhere short of creating a new village or town. And Peel gets an extra 2,500, says Ray Harmer. They'll have to go elsewhere. And if we're going to be building... Where are we going to be building, I wonder? Thanks also. Oh, and also the Bishop's Vote bill has gone to LegCo now. It went through Keys yesterday. Laurie Hooper, MHK's private member's bill, seeking to remove the Bishop's Vote in Tynwald, says he's now going to start talks with all members of LegCo. He's been lobbying LegCo. It went through. His constitution bill was voted through its third reading in Keys yesterday by 14 votes to 9. 14 for, 9 against. Any thoughts on that? Text, email, call, WhatsApp, and Jed's first with us today. Hi, Jed.
Hi, Andy. I'd like to follow up on the hospitality news items these last few days,
yeah,
which have been very, very striking. The passionate accounts from the hospitality trade that was on the news show yesterday, where it's real people talking about the problems that they've got and the worries and the concerns about their futures. It was really quite unerring, really, to listen to that. I'm sure all the listeners will share that. I'm just wondering, where is the sense of urgency to help and deal with these people in the hospitality sector?
The urgency from the government, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, simply, very simply, we could have had a quick campaign activated to support local, you know, shop local, maybe just spend an extra tenner this week at a cafe or a pub or a restaurant or somewhere that will benefit very quickly. Because it seems that we've got to do this ourselves as the Manx public. We've got to identify these businesses in our community that look vulnerable. And I think we've got to act, but I would have loved to have seen a campaign from the Department of Enterprise just to give everyone a reminder of the wonderful services that we've got, and that if we don't support them, we're going to lose them, as is happening right across the island, one by one. You know, day by day, there's a news item about a premises closing down.
Do you think the government takes it seriously, Jed?
You know what my views are. You know, if we focused on attracting tourists who spend money, on tourists who like to have a drink and maybe party a little, we could do well. And I think we alluded to it last year in one of our conversations about the Everton football ground, where we're going to have 50,000 people who I think confirmed will be watching top flight football, going very close to the new sea terminal and having a huge great billboard there, you know, attracting, inviting, and let's being clever and creative, bringing people over here to have a good time, to support our pubs, our hotels, our restaurants. This is the line of attack we've got to go on, because there's no time to hang around. The minister mentioned they're focusing on a 10-year strategy in his interview yesterday, and you just put your head in your hands. We need action this summer.
What do you think they should do then? I mean, is this a PR campaign to the people of the Isle of Man to say, you know, go out and spend some money in hospitals, go to your favourite pub, club, bar, cafe, or is it something direct from the government?
I think it's across numerous points, really. I think our MHKs, through their social media, could be a little bit more active. maybe a little bit more involved. They've got a big part to play in this. I think that the government themselves, through the Department of Enterprise, even if it's just helping out with marketing, maybe having a campaign with you people at the radio. But at the moment, it's dead. It's just sterile. It's anonymous. There's nothing going on. And yet we have two public meetings with over 100 people in attendance each time. That's probably more than some of the government roadshows that were held last week. So this is real people with real problems. And we have to jump on it, because otherwise, you know, this summer, you've got a lot of businesses and you know they're hanging by a thread. And we've got to really, you know, be active and be supportive, be creative and be bold.
OK. All right. Appreciate that, Jed. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you.
All right. 12 minutes after midday today. Eddie's on now. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Andy. How are you?
Good,
you
thanks. Right? Yeah, you're fine.
Good. Yeah, I was on yesterday and only minutes after I'd been on, somebody came on and said, I don't know whether it was the very final April Fool's joke or what, about getting the turbine blades round blackboards.
Well, yeah, everybody's talking about how on earth they're going to get these turbine blades from Douglas to Erie Stain, yeah, and quite how it's going to be done. It's, I mean, the thing is, it wasn't a joke. I think it will be interesting as an academic exercise, logistical exercise, just to see how on earth is it going to happen.
Wonder how many double-decker buses that is in length, really. Yeah.
Well, they're big, put it that way, and they certainly won't go under any bridge.
We know, but the main point I was going to point out was that I found it very funny, and so does everybody out here, that the government are actually thinking of these things before they've even got planning permission. There is no way they're going to get planning permission for these things according to the way planning rules are, is there? I mean, you, like, take for instance, I pointed this out before about the salt marsh in Ramsey. Here we've got twice as many reasons why they cannot do it. So why is taxpayers' money being even thought of being spent? If they've ordered them blades, they should be brought to justice, because that's criminal. You cannot spend taxpayers' money until you've got the permission. I sent you some information last week, didn't I? Did you get it?
Which bit about? Which one was it?
Four pages about China and Mongolia, about the Black Lake.
Oh, yes. Yes, you did.
Yeah. Well, the more I find out about these things, is the worse it gets, honestly, Andy. I cannot see that members in our government cannot see what I'm doing. I'm just a layperson. And yet I've found out that my daughter's a scientist. There's six deadly toxics. All six of them are used in the process of wind turbines, right? I'll give you some of them there on that information. But what is really getting me is the ignorance of the world at the moment. We just take it for granted, our mobile phones, our televisions, everything that's high tech has got all these rare earth chemicals in, and we just take it for granted. But we don't think. Just say, for instance, not long back, Black Lives Matter. Now, that was high profile, everything, and people took notice of that. Water aid to Africa, people dying in Africa, so we give loads of money to Africa. We take notice of things that people point out to us that are really bad, and yet we're doing absolutely nothing. The rest of the world is all realising that wind farms do not work, right? And they are poisonous. They're not green. And yet we're still going down the street. I cannot wait for the 13 votes of no confidence in this government, because everything is going the wrong way. Just look at Peel at the moment. How can we have another 2,500 people in
Peel?
Well,
that's the plan at the moment. I mean, the plan is, Mr. Cannon's plan is for an extra 15,000 people to get us up to 100,000, because nothing happens unless the economy works. And they say if we get to 100,000 people, then it will help the economy.
Last week, Andy, I intended to go to all four of the so-called listening. I went to the Castle Rushen one, and for the first 40 minutes, Alf Cannon was hounded by people about the wind farm, and they had to rearrange the whole procedure of what they were doing, and they stopped everything and turned it into a question and answer, so that he could then pass over to some of his members what the questions were.
Well, in fairness, there was always going to be a question and answer. It was supposed to be people talking to individual ministers, and then there was going to be a 45-minute question and answer. So that was always going to happen.
It was chaos, though, Andy, honestly.
And Eddie, you say that wind farms don't work. Well, they do. They just may not be as efficient as people say they are.
Well, that's all the reasons why. For the last 2 years, I've been saying we've got to look at the alternatives, because almost every alternative is better. I mean, Julian tells you again and again that the figures of all these things. I mean, I've just had correspondence from Norway, from people who I organised a holiday for in the Isle of Man quite a number of years ago. They still keep in touch with me, and they are scrapping them left, right and centre.
Well, there's a big campaign in Norway, isn't there? But then again, Norway does benefit from a very complex and very sophisticated hydroelectric system. So they don't really need that much sustainable energy, because they've got the hydroelectrics.
And gas. They've got gas.
Have they got gas? Anyway,
got a lot of gas.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So just going back to gas then, do you think that Kroger should be brought on stream?
Without a doubt.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that, Eddie. Got to go. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. Eddie was talking about, he sent me the information on this, basically it's a toxic lake in Inner Mongolia. Basically, the Chinese have been sending black-bellied liquid toxic sludge into what used to be a lake. It's in a place in Inner Mongolia. It's a Baogong steel and rare earth. It's a big complex dominating the horizon, cooling towers and chimneys. And basically, all the pollutants go into what was this lake. And it is, by all accounts, absolutely shocking. You can find that. It's actually, I think, on the BBC website, if you go to Dystopian Lake Filled by the World's Tech Lust. Dystopian Lake Filled by the World's Tech Lust. It's on the BBC website, and you can see what we're talking about. There is a lot of pollution concern with rare earth metals, and we do have a thirst for rare earth metals because, let's face it, everybody is in love with smart technology. There is no doubt about it. We all love smart technology. So if we're going to do that, and if rare earth materials, and bearing in mind there's lots of them as well, I mean, there's no shortage of rare earth, lithium and stuff like that, so they will be got. How they got and the pollution that's caused is a matter that really has to be resolved. But, well, let's get to the lines now. We've got, Robert with us now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind, Robert?
I was just thinking about the, you're just talking about dystopia or lakes, was it before, or something along those
it's
lines?
A particular lake in Mongolia, yeah.
Right. I was just thinking about cryptocurrency in general. I think that's pretty dystopian, to be honest with you.
Well, nobody seems to, apart from the people involved in it, most people don't know, hide in a hair about cryptocurrency. But what we do know is it takes a lot of electricity.
Yeah, I think so. I think the algorithm that goes with it, I've got a certain caveat on it, but I mean, in terms of like where it's at, if you win, then you don't know who you traded with, in terms of like you could have traded with an African warlord or something like that. You don't know where you got the money from. And if you lose, then it's classed as online gambling. So you can't win either way, can
you? I mean, do you think at the moment it's kind of it's in Wild West territory? Although I think the banks are trying to get on board. And once the banks get on board, then everybody will be in cryptocurrency. But it just depends what level of regulation that they impose.
But when the taxman knows how much you've got, then what's the point in it? Because if the taxman knows, then everybody knows.
Yeah, I mean, the principle is that people pay tax on their earnings.
Yeah, I know, but the idea of cryptocurrency is that you had a private ledger, you had a ledger, and then you had some privacy on that in terms of, like, not many, there's so many transactions going on that, you know, you get lost in the ether of it.
Yeah.
Well, the fact is that once the taxman knows about how much money you've got, then what's the point in it? Like, what's the point in it from a, you know, having your own little pot of gold or whatever it is? Or
so you reckon then if legislation comes in and the banks get involved and the authorities get involved, then it'll just disappear.
It'll be like putting a fork in a haggis. You know, it'll just dissipate. Because what's the point in it? I mean, it may not do. It may go the other way. But I mean, I don't think so, to be honest with you. I think that once people realise that if the taxman knows about it and he's taking his chunk out of it, then, you know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I mean, I'm just saying that I'll have an effect on it.
So, I mean, do you hold any cryptocurrency? Do you hold Bitcoin?
No, but I have a certain caveat on it, and people know that. They listen to me, so, you know.
Well, Bitcoin today is just over 63,000. So
yeah, it has gone up quite a lot. Yeah, you're right. And it is, you know, but it comes from a bad place. It was made on SourceForge. It wasn't made on Launchpad. It was an Ubuntu idea originally, and it was made on SourceForge. So it comes from a nihilistic place. Comes from a place, and just look at all the teenagers, look at all the middle management, look at all the people that is affected, and it's all just online gambling at the end of the day. I think there should be a Cryptos Anonymous. I think that really should be a thing.
Appreciate that. Okay, thanks for calling today, Robert. We appreciate that. This is where you need Paul Beckett. He knows all about cryptocurrency and the implications of it. If you got into cryptocurrency, if you go to any pub or club, you'll always hear somebody who apparently bought Bitcoin at $200. There's always a pub. There's always somebody in the pub who bought it really cheap. It's now $63,000. Was hovering around last year, but it's down slightly, but $63,000 for Bitcoin. Of course, if you are a Bitcoin investor, you're probably sitting in the corner just smiling to yourself, wondering how you're going to spend the money. But nobody knows what's going to happen with Bitcoin. Nobody really knows, and anybody who says that they know, to be quite honest, I'm not terribly convinced that anybody knows where cryptocurrency is going to end up. Because at the moment, as Robert was saying, a warlord can pay another warlord. A gang member can pay another gang member. The head of a narco syndicate in one part of South America can pay somebody else in Africa, or in Leeds, for that matter, or in Norway, or in Denmark. It's that sort of thing. But the one thing nobody has talked about this is that mining Bitcoin takes up phenomenal amounts of electricity. It is not terribly green as far as currencies go. Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hi, yeah. Just diverting a moment from mainly what I want to talk about. Bitcoin, oh no, I mean, that's all very well known. I mean, of course, Iceland, where a lot of cryptocurrency farms used to be, they, you know, using the cheap geothermal electricity that they generate there, they actually contributed to brownouts and blackouts of the, yeah, the Icelandic grid, because they were gobbling so much energy.
But nobody, isn't common knowledge, Bonzo, the fact that to mine Bitcoin, to get this cryptocurrency, I mean, there are server farms in Texas the size of some towns on the Isle of Man.
Oh, quite. And also those in, I think, sort of Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan and you know, around the not terribly well-regulated stands of former Russia, which I think it is Kazakhstan, or is it Turkmenistan, that's now one of the sort of leading crypto mining places. But again, that produces problems with their local electricity as well. How they, but not what I was going to talk about. Because what I was going to talk about was agreeing wholeheartedly with Ged about DfE, well, the Visit Isle of Man in particular, I suppose, but also just the general, you know, general thrust of DfE and the complete lack of leadership and the complete lack of you know, any comprehension of what's going on. I mean, Tim Johnson is completely out of his depth. He simply barely read his brief, from what I can hear on coverage of keys and such. But he certainly has absolutely no understanding of any wider business or economics. He might understand about farming, but that's about it. I think that, and I think many others might agree with that, that the reason he's there is to actually provide Alf with another vote in Comin, because he's the other MHK for Aaron Michael.
What do you think DfE should be doing then for the hospitality trade? Tim Johnson basically talked about it being fair and equitable and proportionate, obviously not prioritising one sector of the economy over another.
Yes, well, I don't prioritise any sector of the economy. That's the problem. This is supposed to be the department that looks after, you know, and provides the environment for the economy to generate funds for everything else. And it is abysmal at doing it. No, it is just a huge failure. Making things agencies, as well, this idea to agency status, which, of course, you know, copied from UK, it has the same result as agency status in UK. It just makes things worse. You know, it puts one layer of government, essentially, or civil service, in the way of the people who are, you know, trying to relate to it in the general public, so as they can deflect criticism and responsibility. I mean, you've only got to look at Visit Isle of Man, latest completely ridiculous nonsense of TTIG. I mean, so banal, so uninventive. I'm waiting for BBC Enterprises or BBC, whatever it is, the commercial arm of BBC, you know, to set their lawyers on them for that one. And it's very strange, as somebody pointed out, that DfE, who are so protective of the TT brand, you know, are so casual with somebody else's. But it just goes to show that the lack of ideas, the lack of really any thought except in their own little bubble. The DfE needs to be essentially, cleaned out, and there needs to be a resumption of having a Department of Trade and Industry with clear delineations of responsibility, rather than vague bits like Digital Isle of Man, in which the creative industries lived. Although Digital Isle of Man have absolutely no interest in the creative industries whatsoever. They're just concerned with fintech and e-gaming and whatever their fancy is just at the minute. There are a lot of people drawing very large salaries in DfE who simply, you know, simply shouldn't be there.
Okay. All right. We appreciate that, Bonzo. Thanks for that.
Okay, then, cheers.
Good to hear from you. Ken's on now. Hi, Ken.
Afternoon. I managed to speak to the Treasury Minister last week in Peel before the hospitality section got to him, and it was about pensions. He The Treasury Minister sort of confirmed it was his intention next year not to follow the triple lock, even if the UK carries it on, because basically the Isle of Man can't afford. That's his opinion, not necessarily, that's Treasury's opinion, not necessarily Tindall's opinion. But the other thing is, ask him about the WASPI women, which is the won an award, well, supposedly won an award, it's the Women Against State Pension Inequality thing, where the Ombudsman's going to give them, recommended between £1,000 and £3,000 for not having been given enough notice. And I said, what's going to happen in the Isle of Man? He said, well, I checked with officials and seemingly the Isle of Man did give enough notice, which I think's wrong. I can't remember when women moved from 60 to 65, but when they definitely moved from 65 to 66, my wife didn't get anything. So he's a bit of his head in the sand, I think.
So what do you make of what he said?
Well, we're running out of money, I think, basically. But he's sort of believing that the Manx women, I think Alf Cannon was the Treasury Minister, because I had a go at him about going back in years ago in one of the last road shows they had years ago. And he said, oh, yes, women in the Isle of Man have had enough notice, and it'd be too difficult to distinguish Manx women from UK women who've come over here, basically. And he said they've had enough notice because it's been in the UK papers. I say, exactly, UK papers. We're the Isle of Man, so we should have done our own thing.
And you think the Isle of Man should plough its own furrow where this is concerned?
Well, that's the big argument for breaking away when we broke away from the UK, all the social security payments and things like that. But we seem to have stuck with it, but now we're running short of money. We might break away and not give, but I would think the UK will keep the triple lock because it'd be political suicide with an election coming up.
So do you hold out much hope for women's pensions on the island?
Not really, no. I'm just wondering if anybody else can remember getting letters telling them that, you know, they were getting moved from 60 to 65, and then the important point, from 65, they brought forward the 66, you know, a couple of years earlier than it should have been. But I'm just wondering if anybody else can remember getting letters.
Okay.
The other thing, can I talk about the sewage in Peel?
Yeah.
Where it went to the council ministers to make a decision. Is it correct that the council ministers can override any planning objection to say it's in the, you know, the Isle of Man's interest to have things done?
Well, yeah, I mean, the government has the ultimate authority.
Yes, and it was with council ministers for 4 months, and they decided it wasn't up to them, so they passed it back to planning. Which might be the thing with the wind farms. Doesn't matter what you object, if the council ministers decide it's in the national interest, they'll override any decisions.
Okay.
And get the things built.
All right, Kev. Thanks for calling today.
Cheers.
Bye. That's 25-1 on Man in Line.
At Isle of Man Energy, we're excited to offer our customers the Alpha E-Tech Efficient Hybrid Gas Boiler and Heat Pump Combination. This state-of-the-art hybrid boiler causes minimal disruption to your existing heating system, making it simple to upgrade. Priced from just £65 a month and with 6-year warranty as standard, which can be extended to 10 years, what are you waiting for? Register for a free consultation at islandmanenergy.im.
Hello, I'd like to rent a car for 3 days. Just something reasonable.
No problem at all. We've just a few rules. You can't go off-island, you can't smile in the car, you can't take any friends. Oh, and it's £10,000 a day.
Renting a car doesn't need to be difficult or expensive. With prices from just £50 per day and now collection and drop-off at the airport and Douglas, speak to Rex Rental Company or book online at rexrental.im.
Rex Rentals. I'm so glad to hear that.
We're all feeling the pinch right now, so how would you like to make some cash by selling your old gold, silver, jewellery and watches? Coming to the Isle of Man for 30 years, Peter, the gold, silver, jewellery and watch buyer, will be at the Village Hall in Ballasalla on Thursday the 2nd of May from 12 noon to 3pm. Peter will pay immediate cash for any old unwanted jewellery, gold or silver that may be stuffed away in a drawer or cupboard. From watches to brooches, coin sets to tankards and everything in between, even scrap. So start your treasure hunt today. Go see Peter and make some cash. For more information, call 0753 096 2038 or see his full page advert in this week's Courier for all dates and locations. Now that's the real deal.
Yes, it's Guild time again. And throughout this week, the Villa Marina is the home of the Manx Music, Speech and Dance Festival. But what's it really like?
It's the most supportive environment. It's the most loving environment. It's the most nerve-wracking environment. And I'm just so proud of them all.
Bite-sized breakfast reports, supper at 9 with an hour of Guild highlights, and you can binge on YouTube videos and podcasts just by going to manxradio.com.
Oh dear, I don't think that's supposed to happen.
Manx Radio, your complete Manx Music Festival station.
So, all good in the end.
Manx Radio's coverage of the Manx Music Festival is brought to you with Spectrum Windows.
The man in line with Andy Witt.
It's 23 minutes before 1, 60th anniversary, looking at every Wednesday, Monday and Friday. We look back in the archive, and every Wednesday we'll put an archive edition of Kelly's Eye, which today is looking at the Mormon Church. The Mormon Church on Woodburn Road. Peter Kelly casts his expert eye over the architecture for the Mormon Church. We've got so many issues that we need to be dealing with, but Laurie Hooper, probably more than most, I think he deserves to lose his seat for wasting time on this bishop issue. I don't care about the bishop. When has his vote ever made a difference in recent years? I just think we should get our priorities right. That's WhatsApper 416. Asking us to support the local hospitality sector is all well and good, but we've had just more money taken out of our pockets via that 2% tax rise, which means less disposable income. Likelihood that means less money for spending on eating and drinking out. And I agree with the last caller's sentiment about spending locally, but personally, my wages have reduced due to recent tax changes. My rent's gone up and the general cost of living has soared, and the pubs and cafe prices have gone up too. People like me simply can't afford to eat and drink out like we used to. Any government assistance need to be passed on to the consumer. Hospitality isn't the only industry here. Helps needed across the board, not for just one sector. Thank you. From G, and Frank's on now. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Andy. Oh, there's so many things to talk about, isn't there? You know, I think, and all the time that I've been here, and I first came here in 1961, so I've been here a long time, and I've stood for the keys. I think you know that anyway. And I think this is the worst government we've ever had. And this idiotic idea from Cannon about bringing 15,000 more people to the Isle of Man is absolute stupidity. He doesn't take into account that the infrastructure on the island can't cope with the people we've got now. We need more doctors, more nurses, more everything. The hospitality industry is dying. They're not doing the job they're supposed to do. And the one thing with this 15,000 more people, does Cannon not realise you'll get a minimum, an absolute minimum, an extra 15,000 cars? You put 15,000 more cars on our roads and you have gridlock, you won't be able to get anywhere. That's so stupid.
Well, presumably, I mean, he's thinking that the economy has to grow. We all know that the economy has to grow to pay for everything. So it's not going to grow unless we get more people on the Isle of Man or we start paying each other a lot more.
I agree. The economy's got to grow, but there are other ways of doing it. For example, I've given many sort of ideas about how to do things maybe better. Maybe people don't agree with everything I say, but everybody's got an opinion. I mean, like, for example, we advertise for tourists, and we always advertise in the north of England. Everybody in the north of England knows where the Isle of Man is. But you go further down south, or you go to other countries, they've never even heard of it. Now, I've gone through this before about we've got a marvellous thing here with Miles Standish, who was the founder of America, who comes from the Isle of Man. Why don't they advertise in America? You'd get hundreds of thousands of Americans come here, and they spend money, a lot of money when they come here. But no, nobody's ever taken it up.
Well,
that's interesting.
I mean, obviously, we don't have a Department for Tourism anymore. We don't have a Minister for Tourism. Long gone is the Minister for Fun. The tourism got hollowed out, and it's now Visit Isle of Man, part of Enterprise now. So we don't have a tourism. We don't have the big ideas from the tourist department anymore because it doesn't exist.
No. So somebody's got to do something. Because the island is dying. And if these people in government don't realise this, there's going to be no government, no, because if it dies, Britain will take over. And that's what I'm afraid of.
Okay.
It probably won't happen in my lifetime, but it will happen.
All right. Thanks. You've got years yet, Frank. Don't worry.
Yeah, I hope so.
Thanks for calling. 18 bye minutes before one on Manx Radio. Just remember, Texter 404 said, talking about what Jed was saying about hospitality, the reason hospitality is struggling is because a lot of the public are struggling. They can't afford pubs and cafes, and the government can't help everyone. They're too busy helping themselves, 604 says. I think, Mike, this is regarding Laurie Hooper and getting rid of the bishop's vote in Tynwald. I think they should keep the bishop and get rid of MHKs. S in Onchan, local businesses that offer good value and pleasant experience will do well. So why should we help businesses, some of which are rubbish? Which ones? And no amount of government help will work or indeed is justified where this is concerned. Here's a note in from Barbara who said, she said, Andy, the thing is with hospitality, they're dealing with smiley faces. Follow me on this. Everybody who works in hospitality has to have a smiley face. But lots of people, those smiley faces are hiding a very sad face because they know the state that the hospitality is in. Perhaps the government is seeing the smiley faces and not understanding what is behind them. So what do we do? I wonder if that proposed new housing scheme in Peel will get 25% of the bill costs from the government. Don't think so, Fran. Another land grab in Peel? Will the urban sprawl end? When will we have countryside? We've got lots of countryside here. I mean, we're big. We're a big island, and there's lots and lots of countryside. We apparently have collapsing birth rates, so why are all these houses needed, says 179. Well, the plan is, 179, that we're going to attract people. We're attracting people to come to the Isle of Man to get us up to 100,000 population. The issue's always been on the island is a decreasing population. You may not remember, but there was a disastrous point in 1960 into 61 when the census revealed that the population had gone down to below 45,000. People were leaving the Isle of Man in droves because there was simply nothing to do, no work. The Isle of Man was predicated on a tourism economy on a 13-week season, basically, and that was finishing when cold water tourism in Northern Europe disappeared. Everybody started going to the Mediterranean for holidays. The Isle of Man, like many other places in the British Isles, was backing a loser, and we had to do something. In 1984, the then Chief Minister, Miles Walker, and cohorts brought us to where we are with the finance sector and captive insurance and what have you. So we do need people. There's no getting away from that. Without people, nobody's driving the economy, and therefore nothing can get paid for. Of course, it's how many people, what sort of jobs, what level of tax and incentives that there are to come to the Isle of Man. It isn't exactly black and white. I mean, at the end of it, there is a decision to be made, is do we want more people? This government's decided that we do. Every other government's decided that we do want people, that we need people. Regarding the bishop's vote, yes, it's historic, but what would people say today if we were told tomorrow that the UK was imposing an unelected member of the House of Commons to come and sit in our parliament and vote on legislation? There would rightly be outrage. I think it's time to get rid of the vote of the bishop and modernise LegCo. Texter 653 says, Andy, regarding the bishop's vote, yes, it's historic, but again, there would be outrage. We need to modernise it. The idea of Bitcoin was to stop banks tracking your transactions, not hiding your wealth from the taxman. Otherwise, all the rich would be backing it. And this whole... Thank you for... Sally, you just said, I've no idea what cryptocurrency is. Does it involve me? Cryptocurrency is digital currency. Make-believe currency, if you like, designed to work as a medium of exchange through a network of computers that isn't reliant on a central authority. It's kind of the Wild West, if you were. It's not subject to a government or a bank to uphold it. It is, bluntly, it's make-believe money. You can... individual ownership records are stored, as John said... Robert said, sorry, in a digital ledger, which is a computerized database, which is very secure, which secures your transaction records. The whole point of cryptocurrency is that it was meant to be away from the authority of the state and the banks. And the state and the banks now want to look at it and see what they can do with it. And at the moment, lots of people are making lots of money. Many people have lost lots of money. Some people have had their lives ruined by cryptocurrency, and yet parts of it continue to flourish. If you've got any thoughts, if indeed you are a cryptocurrency trader and you can demystify it for we, the commoners, that would be great.
Right. I say, when you're looking for the perfect bathroom, get your silly walk over to Pacesetter, where you'll get friendly help and advice on bathrooms that will work for you. From practical, accessible bathrooms for aging users to the ultimate in luxury designs with walk-in showers and wet rooms. With no inquisitions, dead birds, or hard sell. You'll always be on the bright side of life when you see the stunning range on display at Pacesetter Tile and Bathroom Studio, Harris Terrace, Douglas. Or search online for Pacesetter Douglas.
We're cooking with sunshine, cholera. We're washing with sunshine, cholera. We're heating with sunshine, cholera. The future looks good. Call 676-544. Call 676-544.
I began to struggle with the stairs, but I didn't want to leave our family home. So my daughter told me about Acorn Stairlifts and their new showroom in Douglas. I was able to try the stairlifts and find the right one for me and the home I love. They were so friendly. The whole process was hassle-free and they offered the whole package from installation to servicing. Choose the island's first choice for stairlifts. Acorn Stairlifts, South Quay, Douglas.
Call Acorn Stairlifts now on 672 414 or call into our Douglas showroom.
Caroline North is back on the air this weekend for you with some music from the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s. Later 558 is celebrating 40 years and our guest DJ is Tommy Rivers. We have money to give away in a competition to spend in the Caroline Webshop and the whole weekend is sponsored by Turton Tower Woodland Cafe. Join us this weekend on Caroline North on 648 and 1368 AM with Manx Radio.
Radio Caroline North. Pure nostalgia.
The only radio station that's Manx, and we're proud of it. Celebrating 60 years, this is Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
11 minutes before one, each turbine blades about 3.5 articulated lorry trailers in length, says Mark, talking about getting the wind turbines from Douglas to where they want to put up the wind turbines. Why are they discussing trying to get to move the turbines? They haven't even got planning yet. When I spoke to the Chief Minister, this is Mary and Ramsey on WhatsApp, when I spoke to the Chief Minister at the roadshow, they said they definitely weren't on order. They weren't mentioned in the All Ireland plan and there's been no public mandate for them. I think this is virtue signalling and a vanity project by the government doing their best to ruin the Isle of Man, says Mary. On the one hand, says Nigel, the government wants an additional 15,000 people, and yet they want to pay somebody more than £100,000 a year as an AI head. No tax or no NI from a computer. Mixed messages, I believe, says Nigel. Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Good. What a lovely day.
Yeah, it's a bit cloudy in certain places, but it seems to be hanging on in there. Yeah, just quickly before the digital currency thing, people, I think, in Douglas and Onken will have to realise that the current talk is between 5 and 8 of those, something up to a Blackpool tower turbine, and there's 3 on each one. So that's going to be 24 of those 3.5 bus length articulated things scrunching round roundabouts and bridges and corners. So
I can't. I've been trying to mentally in my head visualise how it's going to happen.
No, I know. I mean, all you need to do is look at, say, wind turbine blade Hoyk, you know, HAWICK up in up in the north, and there's a very good video on YouTube of them trying to move one of these things around. It's quite something to behold. Just another quick thing, you know, something occurs to me. You know the Looney's closure in Ramsey?
Yeah.
Could that be anything to do with the fact that there is calls for the Parliament Street to be pedestrianised, because we've seen quite a few businesses have closed in Castletown, including the butchers recently. Do you think the footfall, especially with a population that perhaps doesn't want to walk miles, because apart from Ramsey Quay, which is pretty full whenever I look there, it's not that easy to park. You know, if you want to go to Millichaps or something, I mean, how far are you going to have to walk to get there?
I'm trying to think. Well, and of course, it is fairly restrictive parking on Parliament Street. As you say, there's the Quay, you've got St Paul's Square and the Marketplace, really.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd be interested if they rescinded the call for pedestrianisation of Parliament Street, said we are definitely not doing that. I wonder if Loonies might decide to change their mind on it.
Anyway, you've got a minute on cryptocurrency.
Right, okay. Cryptocurrency. So it's a tiny fraction of money usage at the moment, but it takes 127 terawatt hours a year, which is the entirety of Norway's annual consumption. So if you think about it, you've got Bitcoin being introduced into the UK. You've got the sand dollar in the Bahamas. You've got the Ravinia in Ukraine. You've got digital yuan is already being used in China. India's got the digital rupee coming. You've got the Kazakhstan, or even the National Bank of Kazakhstan are doing a pilot run. So if you think that each transaction completed requires 707 kilowatt hours, that is a quarter of a house's annual usage of electricity to process an entire transaction. So you scale that up to the whole world. Shouldn't the Greens be up in arms about that kind of electrical usage?
I've always wondered this, and it just seems to go completely under the radar that cryptocurrency is horrendously unsustainable.
Yeah, I mean, the vast amount of power they're going to need. And, you know, you look, and they're all talking about the CBDCs, the central bank digital currencies that they want to put on us, which will, of course, micromanage everything. You know, they'll even tell you, oh, you can't drive today because your carbon credit has run out. Or, as you see in China, people are being punished for travel if they do too much. So, you know, it's a big question.
How many terawatts was it again?
127 terawatt hours. The annual consumption of everyone in Norway.
Good Lord. Thanks for that, Julian. Appreciate it. A terawatt hour, by the way, because you got kilowatt hour, 1,000 watts per hour, megawatt hour, a gigawatt hour, and a terawatt hour is a lot more. I think gigawatt hour is 10 to the power of 9. Terawatt hour, 10 to the power of 12. I'll be honest with you, I can't understand why anybody who's into sustainability is countenancing cryptocurrency just on that alone. Anyway, that's it for Man in Line today. Thanks to Howie Kane on the phones. Back tomorrow at high noon.
WINT.
60 years serving you as the nation station. This is Manx Radio.
Kelly's Eye. Brought to you by Ellis Brown Architects.
Peter, what's Callie's eye looking at today?
It's a sort of 70s style building. It's sort of like a fire station in a way, the sort of thing that was built, except instead of a row of doors down on this side where you'd expect the fire engines to come dashing out of, there's a series of windows, because this building, and I don't think if it wasn't for the name on the side, I don't think people would realise what it is. But in actual fact, it's a church.
It's saintly.
It is. Or maybe it's a tabernacle. I'm trying to think what they call it. We're in Douglas. We're on Woodburn Road. We're on a busy corner, and it's night time, but it doesn't stop the cars going past. And it actually says the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
So it is a church.
It's a church. I mean, some people will know it as the Mormon church. It's built here on the corner. This was part of the garden of a house called Woodside, which for many years was the home of the Emmett family, who had those gentlemen's outfitters, and they had Victory House and the factory behind making gloves for soldiers and things.
Yes.
In the 70s, the Mormons purchased Woodside from Mrs. Killen. It was let off in a series of rooms, hived off this part of the garden, dug foundations and commenced work on building the church in January 1973. And by the 7th of December 73, so within the year, they'd actually completed it and no doubt held their Christmas services here. In the meantime, they then sold on Woodside, which was bought by the Baines family, who altered it considerably during 73 and 74, and that became Africa House.
Mm.
Where this building is, was in fact, the down at the bottom end, was the stables to the original Woodside, and that was a sort of typical small coach house and stable with rather nice filigree barge boards, which I stupidly didn't get in at the time and get before they were chopped up.
Yeah.
Prior to this, they were based in Athol Street in rooms above Central Motors, if you can remember that. And all these young missionaries had come over from America, young lads who went in twos, all with overcoats and little pork pie hats on, knocking on your door day and night. And then gradually they built up sufficient funds to be able to A, purchase, and then B, build a church of their own. And it's now part of the town scene. People drive past and probably don't give it a second thought.
Many of the most iconic buildings around the island have been designed by Ellis Brown Architects. Keep up with Ellis Brown today on Facebook or via ellisbrown.im.
Part of island life for 60 years. This is your magazine.